You're listening to a curated podcast from the Beyond Infinity radio program, broadcast live on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. from our Mornington studios in Victoria, Australia. Presented by me, Piers Cunningham.
And me, John Young.
Into our science and technology news for the week on this Tuesday, the 20th of December. Yahoo, which is one of the oldest electronic mail services that's around. I think Yahoo Mail was around well before Gmail was, for example.
Sure. Yeah.
About 6 months ago, or even less, we reported on a big hack, I think, involving about 500 million Yahoo accounts.
I think it was the biggest at the time.
Yeah. Well, Yahoo's come out and admitted that there's a second big attack that involved the user details of about a billion Yahoo Mail users.
Now, which should pretty much be all of them, I'd imagine.
You'd reckon. Yeah, I didn't even realize they had that many. Yeah. It's a large chunk of people using that service still. One of the curious things about this is it happened, you know, 3 years ago, back in August 2013. Why the company's taken this long to come out with this information is kind of quite controversial, I would imagine, and there'd be users who'd perhaps be feeling a bit let down by this, particularly if their information's been compromised, or if, you know, passwords that they may have not changed very often, or they'd use for multiple accounts, that sort of thing. Yep. You know, there's all sorts of possible things that might have happened. This hack involved names, email addresses, telephone numbers, dates of birth, hashed passwords. What's a hashed password, John?
Oh, rather than sending in plain text, so ABC123, which is a terrible password, but rather than just sending that, it's encrypted, or it's turned into this long line of different letters and numbers.
Okay.
So that's what the hashing process does.
Okay.
And so they would store that hash on their password systems, but there's another step, which I won't get into now, but it's called salting that. But if they don't salt it, then they can say, oh, here's a hash on this site, let's compare it to other systems, other login accounts, other servers, and see if that matches on those passwords as well.
Okay, right. Well, so they've got those hash passwords, as John just explained, and then they've also got encrypted and unencrypted security questions and answers. So those are the sort of things where they say, okay, well, if you've got your password, then here's a question.
Yeah, what's your mother's maiden name?
Yeah, exactly.
What street did you grow up on?
Yeah, that kind of what was your telephone number when you were a kid? That sort of stuff. So even that kind of information's been taken. An official statement that came out from Yahoo, and it was actually sent to users of Yahoo Mail, this came out on December the 14th, says that Yahoo has identified data security issues concerning certain Yahoo user accounts. Yahoo has taken steps to secure user accounts and is working closely with law enforcement. What happened? Law enforcement provided Yahoo in November 2016 with data files that a third party claimed was Yahoo user data. We analyzed this data with the assistance of an outside forensic expert and found that it appears to be Yahoo user data. Based on further analysis of this data by the forensic experts, we believe an unauthorized third party in August 2013 stole data associated with more than 1 billion user accounts. Yahoo has not been able to identify the intrusion associated with this theft. We believe this incident is likely distinct from the incident we disclosed on September the 22nd, 2016, so separate to that 500 million user hack that happened back then, which we reported on the program. They've even gone on to suggest that it may have been a state-sponsored hacker that was involved in doing this.
Right.
And they haven't really kind of given much reason for that, but they're saying that they've had the assistance of outside forensic experts.
Yep.
And, you know, you could infer from that law enforcement, the FBI, that kind of thing as well. And they're suggesting that perhaps a bad actor who's funded and supported by a state, so, you know, a government. And this has been suggested in relation to a bunch of hacks, including the hacks on the Democrat convention during the last election, and also the Republican.
The email hacking.
That's email hacking, and then the selective release of stuff, which might have favoured one side over the other.
Yeah.
So it's increasingly becoming a tool for all sorts of things, not just commercial and industrial espionage, but also interfering in countries' politics as well. It seems to be the trend.
It is.
It's not good news if you're a Yahoo account holder of Yahoo Mail. The best thing to do is just go to help.yahoo.com and you'll find out some specific recommendations from Yahoo about what to do. But obviously, you know, using things like two-factor authentication is a really good thing to do. You can have it set up so that when you enter a password, if you're logging into your mail, you'll get a number sent automatically to your
message,
phone.
Yeah. Or you've got an app on your phone which will display rotating numbers and you have to enter it in the same time.
Yeah.
Token.
And that means that if someone has hacked your password, then they can't get in unless they've got your phone as well. So,
and make sure that you're using unique passwords for all different sites. Mm. And don't think this is just going to be restricted to Yahoo. This is huge numbers here, but there is a very good chance that a service that you are using will get hacked, whether it be over the coming months or the coming years. So as long as you're protected with two-factor authentication, unique passwords, you have a better chance. That's not saying you are going to be clear and clean, but you have a better chance of not having other accounts compromised.
Mm. So there you go. 1 billion users affected by that, and that's a separate incident from the hack that we reported a few months ago now about 500 million user accounts details being compromised. So bad news there for Yahoo, particularly, I think, at the time when it's about to be bought out. I think Verizon is buying Yahoo.
Yeah, it's struggling a lot at the moment. There's a
process going on there, a buyout process for several billion dollars, and the fear, I think, from Yahoo's side is that the price may be affected by this. In other words, the value of the company is diminished by these sort of things happening.
And maybe this is me being a cynic, but maybe it was generated by people that were interested in bidding in the company. Yeah.
Good way to force the price down.
Yeah.
Now, Ireland is known as a place that large corporations like Apple and Google can domicile themselves and make themselves a headquarters, for example, and save themselves a lot of tax.
Yeah.
And
there are some, it's mainly a tax haven.
That's right. And it has connections to offshore tax havens. So you can have a company that's kind of existing in two places simultaneously.
Yep.
All sorts of weird stuff, which you'd reckon in a world where governments are wanting to get taxes from big multinationals who are making a truckload of money. I think Apple's revenue is $300 billion US per year. There's a big tax amount that's up for grabs there. Not much of it's being paid as the rules that apply in Ireland are being taken advantage of. So companies like Apple and Google are not, strictly speaking, doing anything illegal. You could argue that maybe it's unethical because they should be more inclined to want to pay tax. But obviously, they're a profit-driven company. They're answerable to shareholders. Where they can, where there are ways of getting around it, they will do that. Now, in Ireland's case, it's in their advantage because there's all these companies that wouldn't be in Ireland if it wasn't for the tax laws that they have, and there's kind of this little mini cluster of very big multinational companies that have all got their head offices
profitable
and they're all in Ireland, so it kind of has a benefit for Ireland but not for the EU, of which Ireland is a member of. So the European Union has recently come out and basically said that Apple is going to have to pay them $18.6 billion, which is the tax that should have been paid over the last 20 years plus interest.
Wow.
Apple has basically said no way.
Go get lost.
And they're going to fight it as well.
Yep.
And they don't like the fact that they're being singled out. They see themselves as a kind of an obvious target for the EU. But interestingly, what's happened is the Irish government has actually come out and made some criticisms of this commission of the EU. Mm-hmm. What they've said is the commission has manifestly breached its duty to provide a clear and unequivocal statement of reasons in its decision, in relying simultaneously on grossly divergent factual scenarios, in contradicting itself as to the source of the rule that Ireland is said to have breached, and in suggesting that Ireland granted aid in relation to profits taxable in other jurisdictions. I mean, we had Brexit not so long ago, six months ago, and that was over what was perceived as overreach from Brussels, from the centre of European government into the affairs of Britain. So they've pulled out of, they've done the famous Brexit for good or ill. And now you've got another member of the EU kind of, having a pretty big crack at it and defending its right to have its own tax laws and its own independence from EU jurisdiction. Now, it'll be very interesting to see how this pans out. Apparently, there are other countries in the EU that are contemplating an equivalent of Brexit, including France. So there's a bit of a tide of dissatisfaction.
Probably going to wait and see what happens with England, removing themselves and what that process involves and then the effects of that. And if they see that it's positive for them, maybe then they'll just go, yep, we're out, we're done.
Yeah. But, look, all that said, it is known. It's been a very well canvassed. Even in Australia, the former Treasurer Joe Hockey was quite critical and outspoken about the way that multinationals were using offshore and international tax rules to minimise the amount of tax that's paid in Australia. So, companies like Apple make a lot of money in Australia from selling their products. It has been argued that they're not paying their fair share. So it cuts both ways, but it has a political element, which is the EU influencing its member states or perhaps unduly influencing them, and then also this problem of how you how you stop multinationals from avoiding paying tax by, you know, and if it's not Ireland, it'll be somewhere else.
Yep.
Just finally, in my part of our science and tech news for the week, a little space fact that caught my eye. Jupiter actually doesn't orbit our sun. Now, the reason for this is that Jupiter is so large that it actually exerts a bit of a pull on the sun. So in other words, the Jupiter and the sun are actually kind of rotating about a point in between them. Now, this is obviously much closer to the sun than it is to Jupiter.
Yep.
You know, whereas the Earth actually orbits the center of the sun pretty much accurately because it's so much smaller and it's so dominated by the sun.
So it would create a little bit of a wobble, I guess, in the sun, like a very minute.
That's right. And that's the way that they look for exoplanets. They often don't, they can't observe them directly because they're so tiny. But the way that they can tell that they're there is because there's this slight wobble.
Yes.
And Jupiter obviously exerts a much bigger magnetic force on our sun than does Earth and the smaller planets. Jupiter is an enormous body. Early on in the evolution of our solar system, we could have wound up with Jupiter being a second sun, so it would have been a binary system. I think it was like in Star Wars, there was a double sunset and sunrise. So we could have had that same sort of thing, and that would obviously have changed the likelihood of habitability on planet Earth if that had been the case. It didn't. Jupiter was slightly on the low side in terms of its mass. It wasn't able to coalesce enough material around it for it to get big enough to turn into a sun. But nevertheless, it does influence the sun, and it actually means that the sun and Jupiter are actually orbiting around a point in between them. Just the differences in size. The sun is still far more vast than Jupiter, with a diameter of 1.39 million kilometers in diameter. And that's nine times the diameter of Jupiter, which has a diameter of 142,000 kilometers. And that in itself is 11.2 times the diameter of Earth, which is 12,000. Amazing to think how large Jupiter is. And I think it's got 2.5 times the mass of all the other objects apart from the sun in the solar system.
Wow.
Now, John, you've got some interesting stuff for us.
Yeah, well, Evernote, it's a very popular note-taking service. I've been using it for years, but there's been some concern over the last week about privacy of users' accounts. Now, the CEO has come out and they'd adjusted their privacy settings. The terms of service basically indicated that they were going to allow the Evernote employees to access notes and read them. They argued that this was to help improve the service itself. So they use a mixture of machine learning technologies to understand your content, but they wanted to use humans as a bit of oversight and to read that. Now, obviously, this has concerned a lot of users, myself included, and there was quite a big kickback online and people saying that this is unacceptable. We expect that if we store our notes on your service, that you're not going in there and reading them.
Right.
Now, an initial response from the CEO came out and said, oh, well, we need it for particular reasons, and one might be if there's law enforcement needing access to it. Again, there was still a lot of pressure from the community, and it does look like they've come back. They've eased off their policy changes. They're reaffirming their commitment to keep privacy at the center and that no employees will be reading note content. So I'll be keeping an eye on this. I'm a little concerned because Evernote has been in a little bit of decline over the last 12 months, 2 years. They've really been pushing for subscription-based users, which is where they need to make their money. They've been changing their model slightly. Evernote's time may be limited. It might only have a couple of years left, unless there's maybe some angel investors coming in to help them out.
Right.
And this reading of your notes is a major concern, and it could actually turn a lot of users away. So if you're an Evernote user, have a serious consideration about future use of that.
Okay.
Tesla, the famous electric vehicles that are available, they're amazing vehicles. I'd love to be able to own one. I just don't have that kind of cash to be able to afford. Maybe one day. But in order to charge it, you have a variety of options. One being you can charge at home, plugging into your home power. Another option is to use their supercharger network. So much like you would go to a petrol station and put the nozzle in your car and fill it with petrol, you can go to a supercharger station and plug in with the cables they have. Now, it does take a while to charge. It's sort of anywhere from half an hour to an hour, depending on how much charge you need. But what a lot of users are finding is that a lot of vehicles are being left at these supercharger stations. It's being treated like a car park.
Right.
So it might be, you think, oh, I'm going to go to the supermarket today. There's a supercharger station nearby, so I'll just go and park it. I'll charge it up and I'll come back in about 5 or 6 hours after I've done all my shopping. Now, this obviously creates a problem because you only have a limited number of superchargers and you've got other Tesla vehicles waiting in line to be able to charge up. And they don't have many options. So you kind of have to wait or you have to find another station pretty quickly.
Yep.
Tesla have basically said this is not on. We understand it's a problem. So they're introducing a 40 cent per minute idle fee for the entire supercharger network. So it doesn't include if you're legitimately charging. So if you park your Tesla and charge it up, that's fine. But if you overstay, then that's when you start getting this charged. So that can really add up in the dollars and hopefully will mean that there's a higher turnover of vehicles now, so that other Teslas can get in there and charge. Yeah,
absolutely. No, it's a good move, isn't it?
Uber for trucking is a possibility through Amazon, and that's sort of what they're dubbing it. It won't be called Uber itself, but it'll be a similar type service. They're looking to sort of tap into the $800 billion market. This is in the US. It's creating a series of trucks that are connected by an app which will allow the everyday user, you know, business for example, to be able to look for trucks that are traveling between certain points and say, well, I've got this, I need to get it onto this truck, and they're then dealing directly with that truck. So taking out kind of a typical third-party broker that might have to organize all these trucks, which adds around about 15% commission on top of that sort of work. It's a way of saving money. It's a way of potentially even getting there faster because you can see that there's a truck traveling between certain destinations and it has the space, you can just get it on straight away and move point to point.
Another big sort of area of disruption potentially for Uber.
Exactly. In a probably a world first that's happened in Australia, the ATO, the Australian Tax Office, was taken offline after quite a major glitch. Now, it wasn't a hack, as far as we're aware. They've been quite clear in saying that this was actually a failure of their systems, whether it be hardware or software, it's not clear. There was a new hardware backup service that was introduced late last year, and it does look like that system failed, and it was storing some of the backup data on that system as well. So what it actually meant was that the ATO systems were offline. This was a week ago, and it was for longer than 24 hours, and I believe that they're still restoring some of the services.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean that your debt has been wiped. It still means that you'll be having to pay your tax. It just means that they lost their records from the main systems and they're having to restore it from backups. But this is quite unheard of in a large government kind of organization around the world, possibly the first in the world that we've heard of this. So let's hope it gets back online. Or maybe we should hope more that it doesn't and we do lose the data.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening.
And head to beyondinfinity.com.au for the best bits from the live show or to connect with us on social media. We welcome your feedback and suggestion for future shows.